This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, a misunderstood chestnut. It's one of the most famous poems in the language. It's taught in high school and loved by people who normally don't read much poetry. It's also a poem that has been misunderstood for generations.
The Road Not Taken.
Robert Frost wrote The Road Not Taken as a joke. That's right, a joke. And to his surprise, his readers didn't laugh. In fact, they took the poem quite seriously. They weren't wrong, but they did miss out on some fun. To talk about the poem, I'm joined from Baltimore by Catherine Robinson, a poet and writer of fiction. She wrote a poem guide to The Road Not Taken for the Learning Lab on the Poetry Foundation's website. Catherine, do you happen to remember where and when you were and how old when you first read The Road Not Taken?
I think my grandfather must have read it to me. He really loved Robert Frost, and he would read me a lot of poetry, and I think this was one of the poems he read.
And then you probably reread it in middle school and reread it in high school, right?
Yeah, this was one of the ones that keeps coming back around.
Why do you suppose that is?
I think that the poem is very powerful for the way it puts forward this sort of galvanizing language about the importance of choice and the importance of individual decision. And I think that on the surface, that resonates with a lot of people, up to including Robin Williams' character in the Dead Poets Society.
Robert Frost said, "Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by. And that has made all the difference. I want you to find your own walk right now, your own way of striding, pacing, any direction, anything you want, whether it's proud, whether it's silly, anything. Gentlemen."
But underneath that, it has this absolutely rich layer of ambiguity and irony and self-mockery even. And I think that even if readers don't necessarily see all of those layers on a first reading, they give the poem a kind of richness and a kind of depth and a kind of almost three-dimensionality.
Well, we're going to get into some of the layers, including the jokey layer of the poem in a moment. But first, what we should do, I think, is to hear it. Now, there are lots of recordings of Frost himself reading the poem, and I'll quote from one of those readings later. But first, let's hear a more neutral reading by Dana Gioia.
The Road Not Taken. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood. And sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could, to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other, as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear. Though as for that the passing there had warned them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh. Somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
So, Catherine, I've read that poem, like you, dozens of times, and I've heard it many times, and it still has the power to drag me along through its thought process. But what's this joke? What's this about a joke? It's not like I'm howling with laughter here.
Well, the backstory of the joke is that Robert Frost wrote the poem as a joke for his friend, the poet Edward Thomas. And when Frost was living in England, he and Edward Thomas would go on these long, long walks. And whenever they came to a fork in the road, Edward Thomas would stand there and deliberate and think, and then finally say, "You know, I think if we go down this fork, we'll find a bird's nest, or we'll find this rare little stand of wildflowers." And then they would walk along and walk along and walk along, and there would be no bird's nest. And then Edward Thomas would castigate himself and be convinced that if they had only taken the other fork, they absolutely would have found that bird's nest or that stand of wildflowers. Uh-huh. And so Frost would sort of tease him and say, you know, no matter which road you take, you're always going to wish that you had taken the other one.
So Frost wrote the poem as a gently mocking way of making fun of his friend. And he sent it to him, right?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
And then what happened? How did Edward Thomas take this joke?
Well, he didn't, is the short answer. He read the poem and he thought it was a very serious, earnest meditation on the importance of choice and the importance of individual decisions. He wrote Frost a long letter where he didn't see the mocking, gently humorous side to the poem at all.
He didn't see himself in that poem at all, not in the slightest way.
No, he didn't see himself in the poem, but he was sort of taken aback by the powerful message which was contained in this incredibly colloquial, incredibly informal language. Mm. And he wrote to Frost and said, he described himself as being staggered by realizing that the language of poetry could be so simple while containing such deeply powerful message.
And Frost must have been staggered on his part.
Yeah, there was a bit of mutual staggering.
Yeah, that his joke did not register with Thomas. So what did Frost do?
Well, he wrote back and he said, I think that your respect for me as a poet is clouding your perception a little bit. I think it's because you respect me as a poet so much that you see this as being serious at all. And yes, the language is informal. Yes, the language is colloquial. But the message itself isn't, it's not so much a message as a sort of playful joke. And he said, at the end, the sigh is a mock sigh. It's just for the fun of it. And he uses the word fun to describe that.
I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence.
Yeah, you can hear a little bit of that mockery in Dana Joy's reading of it. And so what was Thomas's response when he finally learns that it was a joke on him?
He was a little bit stung, and he pointed out a sort of difference in the temperament of these two poets. He said, you know, Frost was the sort of man who would just pull up all his roots, sail across the Atlantic Ocean, and move to England on a whim because he thought maybe it would advance his poetry career. And Edward Thomas said, I just don't have that in me. I don't have that sort of spontaneity in me. Hmm. He was much more deliberate about things.
Well, it's also important to say that the poem was written probably in about 1914, right?
Yeah.
And it was
very important.
Yeah, and it's right at the beginning of World War I, where a lot of young men are facing a very stark choice about, you know, to go into the war. And in fact, Thomas did sign up.
Yeah, Edward Thomas was one of those men, and he was killed in World War I not long after he enlisted.
So Frost writes it as a joke. His friend doesn't get the joke. Did Frost realize at this point that he had written something a little bit deeper than a joke?
Frost says, I'm never more serious than when I'm joking.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would say that even if he saw it as a joke, that doesn't preclude layers of seriousness within that joke.
Let's go through it and see what we can make of it, especially imagining it as a joke and not a joke. Here's Frost reading the first stanza.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood, looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth.
So, Catherine, it's a fable-like beginning, as you point out in your reading guide on the piece. What else do you notice about this stanza?
I think the first line of this stanza is really fascinating for the way it describes this wood.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood.
It's fascinating how he takes that one detail of the leaves and turns it into something that is emblematic for the entire wood.
Mm-hmm.
The wood becomes a yellow wood. And I think that really linguistically foreshadows what Frost is going to suggest mockingly about choice in the poem. He's going to suggest that one choice can become emblematic for an entire life.
And sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler.
I think it's also interesting that he starts right away with a fantasy of simultaneity. Sorry, I could not travel both and be one traveler. Mm. And if you look at just the line beginnings, three of those lines begin with and sorry, I could not travel both and be one traveler. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could. That word and is the word in our language that signals simultaneity, that signals the coexistence of two things. And I think that almost linguistically sets up this fantasy of not wanting to choose, wanting to have both, even as the speaker stands at a fork in the road and acknowledges the fact that choice is inevitable and necessary.
Long I stood, looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth, then took the other as just as fair and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had worn them really about the same, and both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black.
Catherine, he says he took one road because it looked a little less warm, but then he says, really, they were pretty much the same.
Yeah, and I think that's where we start to feel the joke creeping in.
Uh-huh.
He's saying, I took this one because it was grassy and wanted wear and, you know, was less traveled. But then immediately he doubles back and says, actually, the other one was worn about the same amount. And then as if that weren't enough, or in case we missed the joke seed that he was planting there, he then immediately goes on and says in different language that the roads are about the same.
And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black.
So first he says they're about equally worn, and then he says, and actually they're also both about equally untraveled, because if the leaves are untrampled, then, you know, no one has been down either one.
So metaphorically, I think this is the reason people miss the joke, is that we can imagine our own choices in the past here. We can project our own forks onto this road. Should I have married him or should I have taken that job? It metaphorically draws the reader in.
And I think that's a huge part of why it's become such a canonical and iconic poem in our culture, because, yeah, we all have those moments.
And we can all kind of read ourselves into this poem in a very clear way. And that moment of choosing, which is always kind of anguishing, is very apparent in this poem. So the poem goes on about how the speaker convinced himself to take one road and not the other.
Oh, I kept the first for another day. Yet knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back.
At first, this is a thought process that he's describing here. He says, well, I can always come back and do the other one. But then he says, then he admits to himself, no, that's not the way life works. You can't go back and redo things. And it's quite true. We often don't get to make the same decision twice in life.
That's true. I think the tone of the poem borders on becoming slightly eerie at that moment, too. Knowing how way leads on to way, I doubted I should ever be coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing when this poem was written, it's impossible not to hear a small reference to World War I mm-hmm. in those lines. This was written at a time when many, many men were leaving Rhodes, were leaving the Rhodes of their hometowns and doubting they would come back.
And then comes the kicker, the final stanza that has been read and misread for generations.
I shall be telling this with a sigh somewhere ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
That's an extremely ambivalent ending. We could read it as a triumph, that I took this road, yes, or we can read it as rueful regret, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The sigh could be anything. It could be a sigh of contentment. It could be a sigh of regret. And this idea of difference also could be anything. It doesn't say whether the difference was wonderful or whether the difference was devastating. It just says that has changed something, but we don't know what. We don't know whether for better or for worse.
And the conventional way of reading this poem has been that it's a triumph, that I made a tough choice and I took the road less traveled by, even though he says it probably wasn't less traveled by earlier in the poem.
Right.
In other words, I did the more unconventional, perhaps more difficult thing, and that has made all the difference. And the other way of looking at it is of somebody looking back and perhaps regretting this choice.
Yeah, and Frost calls it a mock sigh. So I think there's maybe a third way of reading it, which is a sort of self-mocking, overly dramatic assessment of this one moment in life.
And all these readings can coexist, can they not?
Yeah, which I think is the final triumph of this stanza. The poem is in so many ways about how choice is absolutely inevitable, absolutely inescapable, which it is, mm-hmm. we all know. Mm-hmm. And yet this stanza manages to not make any choices. Hmm. It manages to create a narrative that could be triumphant or that could be rueful. And the language of the poem refuses to choose, which I think is sort of this wonderfully defiant move at the end of the poem. And I think also speaks to the fact that maybe in life we do always have to choose. We do have to take one option and let the other fall away. But in the realm of art, two things can exist at once. Art can somehow trick its way out of having to make those choices that actual reality is always bounded by.
Thanks, Catherine.
You're very welcome.
Catherine Robinson's poem guide to The Road Not Taken can be found in the Learning Lab on our website. As always, let us know what you think of this podcast. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. Also, please let your friends know what you think of it on social media. And you can subscribe to it in the iTunes store. And you can also leave a review there. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.